After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome to Game Time AM. If you're just waking up, you may not have caught the end of the Blues game last night, so we might keep you in suspense for a second. On the broadcast last night, John Kelly mentioned it was the biggest win of the season. We'll see if Jeff Jones next to me agrees. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
And Matt Davis across the table pushing the buttons, making sure we're on the air. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So a big win. Would you call it the biggest win of the season, Jeff?
I think you would almost have to. So, and I think we can probably quantify it. Tom Timmerman is a big fan of tweeting these infographics that show effective chance of making the playoffs given the results of an individual game. Uh-huh. Last night, an LA regulation win would have increased their chances of making the playoffs by 10% and decreased the Blues' chances by about 7.5%. A Blues regulation win increases their chances by about 12% and decreases the Kings' chances by 15%.
That's pretty good.
It's a pretty big swing.
It did feel like a playoff game, honestly, especially in the third period. I mean, there was physical throughout. There were a lot of hits. On the official score sheet, the Kings were credited with 31 and the Blues with 28. That's a lot for a regular season game.
And the game started that way as well. The hits were sort of flowing early in the game, and it was, I think, the way that a lot of folks were getting into the game because there was a lot of tentative puck play early in the game because folks, you know, no one wants to make the first mistake.
No. So we should mention the score. So it was 3-1. It was a little closer than that. They did have an empty net goal with about 6 seconds left. Alex Steen from the blue line, just inside the blue line, put in the third goal of the game for the Blues. They did have a 2-0 lead in the third period, but the Kings scored with I'll have to look that up.
With 2:55 remaining in the third.
Yeah, it was definitely in the last 5 minutes, and it definitely raised the blood pressure of a lot of Blues fans who had stayed up, wondering if they had stayed up for nothing last night. And I tweeted on the St. Louis Game Time Twitter at St. Louis Game Time that don't worry, Blues fans. I think you stayed up for a good reason, and I don't think they're going to let you down. And they didn't. They just had to make it more interesting at the end, right?
They did. It looked like it was about to be your standard, extraordinarily frustrating Blues go out to LA, take a lead, and then just burn it away kind of game. However, after that goal, managed to shut it down. The Kings had a couple more attempts, but only one shot on goal for the rest of the game after that goal with 2:55 left, and it was actually a Kopitar shot from 30 feet out with 2:18 remaining. So the Kings had no shots on goal in the final 2:18 of the game.
That is pretty spectacular, really. So the number one star of the game was Jake Allen. And it sure seemed like during the game that we were watching a little bit different Jake Allen. I noticed that while he was being aggressive, which I thought was good, he was also being a little more fundamentally sound. And if you watched how he was moving from side to side, how he was challenging the shooter, it sure seemed like he didn't have any wasted motion. There wasn't any of that herky-jerky, shaky-jakey type play that we have seen from him when he has been struggling. He sure seemed confident and sure of himself and really showed that by when he was moving it, there wasn't any wasted motion.
And that I think, is when you see Jake playing poorly, is when he is overcommitting in one direction or another. You see him sort of sliding out of the net, for example. There are a lot of things that you see from Jake that indicate just poor positioning. And last night he was much more in control. Now the exception to that was on the goal the Kings scored. You saw him scramble in the crease, be unable to reach forward and grab a rebound. He reached and grabbed Petrangelo on the leg, missed the rebound entirely.
Yeah, and the other thing I think that you see from Jake Allen that you know when he's struggling is, you know, you mentioned how he slides out of the net. he looks confused. He's looking around, and, you know, there was a point where the puck was behind the net in the last minute and a half or so, and he has not done very well on wraparound attempts or when the puck is back there for an extended period of time. He tends to panic a little bit. And I tell you what, he covered the post. There was, if he felt the puck on the right side, he covered the right post. He had one pad down. There wasn't going to be anything where it was just sneaking around the post and in. His positioning and preparedness was a lot better. And, you know, I think fans of Jake Allen have always said that he's an acrobatic goalie, that he makes the highlight save. He really didn't have to make that many quote-unquote highlight reel saves. He wasn't flailing around doing his best Dominic Hasek impersonation, you know, really trying to keep up with the play or making up for a mistake. And to me, that's a great sign that, you know, maybe this decision to have Martin Brodeur as his on-ice coach and really working with him at practice every day and being with the team and the influence of Brodeur, you know, arguably one of the two best goaltenders in NHL history. You know, I think you probably still get a lot of people who say Patrick Waugh was better, but Brodeur had a longer career, was as prolific as Waugh. That has to be a really good influence. You know, the interesting thing to me is the greatest players in almost any sport don't always make the best coaches. And I don't think it was a given that, especially how Brodeur stayed in the organization where he was an assistant general manager, still is an assistant general manager, and has now transitioned to this mentor to Jake Allen. I don't think it was a slam dunk that it was going to work, right? But it sure feels like it is.
Yeah, the team has the best save percentage in the NHL since the change was made to the new goaltending coach. That, I mean,
is that good?
If nothing else, I mean, right, we can examine statistically that the team has massively improved itself since the changeover to Brodeur. And whether it was a matter of Jake needing a different voice, maybe whether it was a matter of you know, just conflict in coaching style, obviously there's a better fit now, and the play is reflecting that.
Yeah, so that, I mean, if anything, I think that it kind of it verifies what I think the Blues have seen in Jake Allen. I've said for a while now that it seems like at every stop on his career, be it in juniors and Team Canada at the World Junior Tournament, in the AHL where he was an all-star goalie there, at each level of his career as he has progressed, he has gotten to a different level where he has been one of the best at his age group, at his level of development.
The question, of course, will be whether or not he can play well in the playoffs, because he has, at every level of his career, played poorly in the playoffs.
In high-pressure situations,
he has played poorly. Yeah. He has been bad in the World Juniors. He has been bad in the AHL playoffs. He's been bad in the NHL playoffs.
So, yeah, we got a little bit of time to go before we figure that one out. But, you know, like they said, it sure felt like a playoff game. The intensity, you know, and you were talking about the chances of the Blues versus the Kings making the playoffs. I mean, it really was fighting for that eighth spot. Kings at home, and where they've had the Blues number at Staples Center for several years now. We should probably try to find the record, St. Louis's record, the last five or eight years at Staples Center. It's not good. I mean, it is not good at all. When they got that first goal, though, it felt like, hey, they got a chance. And that first goal, I am shocked that it counted. So there was a play where David Perron was kind of, he was going to the net. The puck goes there. He throws it up at Jonathan Quick, who makes the save, but the puck kind of drops down, and it's underneath his right pad as he's flailing and kind of belly flops onto the ice. David Perron's there on the edge of the crease. He sees the puck kind of underneath the pad. The referee was on the other side of the net. So on the other side of at least one defenseman and another Blues player and on the other side of Jonathan Quick's body. There is no way he saw the puck. But David Perron goes in, fishes it out from underneath the pad and pokes it in. On the third replay, you can see the referee is skating in, whistle is in his mouth. He is intending to blow the whistle. As he's getting ready to blow the whistle, the puck goes in the net. All of a sudden, he pulls the whistle out and points at the goal and says it's a goal. 9 times out of 10, even more, 9.5 times out of 10, that's going to be a blown play and they're going to have a face-off.
Well, so there are a couple of things, though, about that play that we should keep in mind. The first is that intent to blow the whistle has a specific meaning, and it is not like, it is not, I'm thinking about blowing the whistle. It is the exact instant at which the referee decides to blow the whistle. Now, it is generally bad procedure to skate around with your whistle in your mouth, because when you get whacked in the mouth, you lose teeth. But that does not necessarily always indicate intent to blow the whistle. The other thing is that for the referee on the ice, even if, and this is, again, this is probably also poor procedure, but even if you can't see the puck, you can generally read from the players when the puck is loose. So a lot of officials will, you know, make that by the book call where they don't, where they blow it as soon as they lose sight. But I think in many cases, you'll see officials sort of react to the players around them. And when it becomes obvious that everyone around the net sees the puck is loose, you might not get that play blown dead.
I don't know. It's not like he was. It was a mad scramble for the puck. It was basically just one little swipe.
Right.
So, I just think it was fortuitous that it was not blown dead. So, like you were saying, intent. You know, you don't really skate around with your whistle in your mouth. I mean, he kind of glided with his whistle in his mouth, trying to go up and see where the puck was. He was more patient, I think, than most officials in that situation. So that's
For sure.
I think that's what I'm trying to get at.
Hey, Brad, I looked up those stats for you.
Yeah.
If my math is correct, the Blues, since 2013, are 2-8 at Staples Center, including last night's win.
That sounds about right.
So 1-8 going into that game. Yeah, that just shows the dominance that the Kings have had. I think it's interesting how they match up physically. You know, the Kings are really still a very tall team, a very big team, very physical team. They have tried to get younger at certain spots. We were talking about yesterday where they do have some younger guys up that you might not recognize their names unless you're really following the prospects of the Los Angeles Kings organization. They still have some holdovers, obviously. Jeff Carter, he was around the puck a lot last night. He obviously was frustrated a couple times. He took a kind of a poor penalty, I thought. There was in the third period, both teams took over the glass, delay a game penalties. The one on Pietrangelo, there was a fight along the boards, and the puck comes up, and there was another, I think it was Pearson.
Yeah.
For the Kings.
Tanner Pearson lifts his stick into the puck. The puck goes over the glass, and the call is made for delay a game.
Yeah, that's...
I understand that the rule says that if the puck goes off a defending player's stick in the defensive zone over the glass and doesn't hit anything, then it's delay of game. But, I mean, like, I know Pang on the broadcast last night said that wasn't the intent of the rule.
Yeah.
And of course it's not. But and he later said the Doughty call was the intent of the rule. I don't think that's the intent of the rule either. The intent of the rule is that you can't clear the puck over the glass to get a free to get a free faceoff. That call on Pietrangelo, I guess that's a by the book call. But man, that's brutal, yeah. Especially in a game that late and close.
What are you going to do to prevent that? I mean, there's nothing you could do. I mean, that's tantamount to grabbing his stick with your hand and hitting the puck over the glass.
It was atrocious. Like there's nothing that can be done about that. That's a very bad application of that rule.
But, and I think the way it's written, and I think the way that the league
written,
is defended,
yeah.
There's no other way to call that.
Right. It's just a really horrible circumstance.
And so when I tweeted that, someone actually responded and said he thought that the time it takes to sort it out, and often the referees have to come together and ask the linesman, hey, what did you see? What did you hear? And it usually takes a while to sort those out when it's a borderline call like that. And the delay is almost longer than what you would get from just if the puck goes over the glass, you whistle it dead, you have a face-off. The delay in figuring it out is almost longer than the delay that they were trying to get rid of where they're speeding up the game and putting that rule in effect. So, it's the NHL. They don't always make sense, right? Speaking of the NHL, do you think Ryan Reeves is going to get a phone call today?
I mean, he would almost have to.
It's Jerome again.
Talk about, setting aside the player it is, if you want to talk about...
It's the NHL. They don't set aside
the NHL players. Is so terrible with the consistency on the ice of this application of the rule. We listened to Pang for two periods talk about the accidental, he slipped. He elbowed Jerome McGinley in the face. Elbowed him in the face.
I think in the intermission, Bernie Federica put it, it was very inadvertently.
I don't care
not,
how
not
it,
just not just inadvertently.
Right.
It was very
as though there are degrees of accident. Like maybe he intentionally. like And it doesn't matter how inadvertent it was. If you're not in control of your body, the penalty has to be called. And I understand it's a high pressure game. It's a high energy game. That was a dumbass play.
It was
to jump and throw your elbow into somebody's face.
And later,
and they got away with it.
And later on, the second and third period, they'd zoom in, and he developed a huge welt on his left cheek. I mean, you could see it was popping up. And
I mean,
it looked horrible.
It's inexcusable that went uncalled.
The way he skated off, and on the broadcast, they were, I don't want to say that they were taking it not very seriously. They're almost laughing at how he was having trouble skating off. And even when he got to the boards, he about fell over when he got to the boards, when he got to the door. And
and by the way, can we talk about that as well? That the league mandated concussion spotters,
right?
See Jerome McGinley get elbowed in the face, be unable to go through the open bench door,
almost fall down three times,
and they don't send him out to the locker room.
They don't send him to the quiet room. They don't make sure that
and this is why the NHL will struggle to be taken seriously, because they have these rules about player safety. They have these rules, you know, we're going to consistently apply these things, and they're not. They're never going to, because the league is a garage league.
It was impossible to miss by the training staff, the medical staff of the Kings, first of all. So they should have taken their jobs a little more.
The Fox Sports Midwest broadcast, who doesn't like the Blues broadcast, had it on the Kings bench immediately after the stoppage.
It was right in front of them. It was right in front of them, and he struggled to get on the bench. If a guy is struggling to get through the door, a veteran player like Jerome McGinley, he's unsteady on his feet, he's falling down. He looks punch drunk, basically, right? He gets to the bench and he's struggling that much. How you don't send him to the quiet room is insane.
And then
there's the spotters at the game that it's their job to watch guys struggle.
And Pang on the broadcast said that the trainers came to Aginla and Aginla waved them off. He's not allowed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that.
That's not a thing that should happen.
I'm okay, coach. I'm okay. Keep me in, coach. I'm fine. Yeah, you're not fine. You're falling down. I don't know. Hockey is kind of weird in the gladiator aspect of the sport, where the guy says, I'm fine, I'm ready to play, and they take him at his word, or at least historically they have, but the league is set up not to do that anymore. So, yeah, we should probably reset here. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan KFNS, 105.7 HD2, and streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We'll have audio up on Inside STL today. We do have a guest at the in about an hour, a little more than an hour. We're going to be talking NCAA hoops with Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News. He's a friend of mine, actually, and we'll get into that when he's on the air at 6:30. And we will also bring up that we have a bracket challenge, picking NCAA basketball games for prizes. We'll talk about the prizes. We'll talk about how you register. It's over at ESPN.com. It's hockey fans picking basketball games. What could go wrong?
So I guess that means that I should probably look at what a bracket looks like at some point.
At some point. Well, let's listen to Fagan. We'll talk to Fagan at 6:30, and he'll maybe give you some advice. He says that he's not the best at picking brackets, but he has a funny story about his family, where his entire family has a contest, and the winner has to do something rather humiliating.
So, I mean, usually I would want to. I think the loser of a contest should do a humiliating thing.
Well, yeah, the loser does something humiliating. So,
okay.
In his family, the person who comes in last picking the NCAA tournament has to do something humiliating. So we'll get into that. One thing that I wanted to mention, and Matt Davis hands me a piece of paper here. I think I'll ask him. Fox Sports Midwest said at the end of the game that the Kings, over the course of last night's game, attempted 84 shots.
Okay.
Was 68 what you thought the Blues had?
That's
or what
the only
had?
Thing I can find online whatsoever. On NHL.com, it's got shot attempts for the LA Kings.
NHL, with their commitment to advanced statistics,
has
a room in every arena that tracks advanced stats, and they don't publish the damn stats on NHL.com.
What do they do with them?
I don't know. What does the league do with anything? I'm cranky. I'm really cranky this morning. I'm pissy. I know.
Is that also the quiet room? They just wallpaper the quiet room with stats to try to quiet your mind.
It's funny. I met these two guys in Washington. Every time I was in the press box in D.C., there were these two seats that were labeled NHL off-ice official, and they were always in the same spot. And it was these two guys who, if you told me they were in high school, I would have believed you. But I think they were like recent college graduates, and they had on NHL polo shirts, and they sat there, and they would generally, like, if it was a weekend game, they would be watching college football on their tablets or just not paying attention to the game. So finally, I asked these guys, I was like, what do you do? Like, what is your official job? One of them ran the tablet. So the little mini 4-inch tablet replay screen, one of them, it was their job to troubleshoot that if it breaks. The other ran the blue line camera. So if the blue line camera breaks, it was that guy's job. So there are these two guys who just hang out. So when the stuff doesn't break, they have that entire seat. Maybe allocate some of those resources into publishing the stats you're already collecting.
How do you get that job? Do you have to know?
That's what I mean.
You have to know a guy, right?
Right. Because guy who is in charge of the tablet for replay is probably a pretty sweet full-time gig.
Who may or may not be called on to do anything in the game, because, you know, it's not like they have a review every game.
Right. And even if they have a review, it only matters if it breaks.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's in the press box, so what the hell is he going to do if it breaks? Is he running down the stairs to the elevator?
And it's kind of funny. It's almost like they have a it's kind of like they have a Game Boy. It's not really a Game Boy. What kind of handheld video gaming device would it look like?
It looks like, what is it, a PSP, I guess, right? Like it's about the same size as a PSP.
It might be the same technology.
Hey, Brad.
Yes, sir.
5-on-5. That said, I read you the 68 shot attempts. That's 5-on-5. It doesn't let me check special teams for whatever reason.
Crazy.
All so right. I guess it's reasonable that they could have had 18 shot attempts.
Yeah. So
the Blues killed like 5 penalties, I think, last night in the game. So that sounds right.
Okay. Yeah. That's definitely possible.
The disparity. I mean, the final shots on goal attempt, they have the Kings at 39, the Blues at 26. But, you know, the Blues had 23 block shots.
Right.
23. So you add that to the almost 40. There's 64 shots there that, you know, you're talking about. I don't know. It sure seemed like the Kings were generating lots of chances. And it was weird that there were several times where a Kings player would get the puck in the high slot or somewhere kind of in the middle of the ice in front of the goal. And he'd get the puck and he'd settle it on his stick and he'd just kind of freeze, saying, wait, should I shoot this puck? And then he put it wide or high. I mean, it was kind of like the Robert Bortuzzo play where he gets the puck kind of in the middle of the ice and about 10 feet out, and he puts it high and wide. He pulls a Brad Boys. And I kind of joked on Twitter that Bortuzzo was Italian for, yeah, he can miss from there. Which you were talking the other day about watching Bortuzzo at practice and warm-ups, that guy can snipe the corner
right
in practice when there's no pressure or anything. But, you know, the spotlight shining brightly, he gets the puck all alone 10 feet away, has a little bit of time to think about it, and airmails it into the glass.
Yeah, so I attempted here just to go back to the game summary page for the game, but unfortunately I can't scroll to there because the website is so piss poorly designed that unless you catch it in exactly the right spot and scroll down into the exact right instant, you can't get to the game summary tab, which is, by the way, buried at the bottom on the right-hand corner. Regardless, yes, Robert Bortuzzo, good at shooting in practice, bad at shooting in the game. I'm mad at the league this morning. NHL.com is so useless, like, even when it's working well, that you're gonna need the drop button more than the horn here in about 45 seconds until I get to the
We haven't had to use that yet, knock on wood. That's an inside baseball term for somebody says a naughty word on the air and we have to dump out of it so we don't violate any FCC rules. Because, you know, the FCC is listening to Game Time AM here on 5-9 The Fan.
Somebody, you know what? If I expressed my true feelings on the NHL.com website, somebody would get a letter.
Somebody would get a letter. Hey, we got somebody on the phone?
We've got Joe on the line.
Hey, Joe, good morning, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. You know, I didn't want to be one of these people that only call when the Blues suck. So
that's fair.
You know, but I can't figure the team out. I mean, you win 6. You know, lose 5, win 5. I'll say this, though. Jake Allen, that was a playoff game last night, if you look at it. And, you know, he was outstanding. And, you know, I always said a goaltender is like a quarterback in football. It's the most important position on the team in the playoffs. If you have a goalie, he can certainly carry you for a little way. And, you know, Allen has always had the ability. You know, of course, we have to see him do it in the playoffs. But like I said last night, that was kind of like a playoff game for the Blues, and he stood out. So that's positive.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that last night was the best game that Jake Allen has probably played in his career here. Like, I was trying to think of other appearances for Jake Allen where he played that well and where the game mattered as much, and there were none that immediately sprang to mind for me.
You know, I guess the thing I would say, that's kind of curious, you know, all this time the Blues have had arguably the greatest goaltender in NHL history, Martin Brodeur, right there. Why did they wait so long to put those two together? You know, is that, you know what I'm saying? It's,
yeah, well, so I think there are a couple things in play there. The first is that Jim Corsi is not a slouch in terms of being a goaltending coach in his own right. That's the guy who had, you know, an established reputation, who had had success in the league, and I'm sure there was a hesitation on the part of Brodeur to interfere with the things that Corsi was doing. I think also before this switch happened that Brodeur's interests were primarily in the front office side of running the team and less with the on-ice coaching side. Now, whether or not that changes now that he's had some experience coaching and it appears that he's pretty good at it, I don't know. But I mean, that was, you know, that was for him. That was not what he was interested in doing.
It's a fair question.
So I think that all of those things combined to sort of, you know, there, and because I fall down Wikipedia holes a lot, last night I fell down a Wikipedia hole about airplane crashes, as I tend to do, and they talk about cockpit resource management and deferring to the captain. And I think that in this case, what you saw was everyone deferred to Corsi, and everyone saw, even when there were problems, they didn't feel comfortable speaking up because Corsi was the guy who was in charge of the goaltending, and he was established, and he was respected, and so no one wanted to contradict him. And so now that he's gone, I think you have a lot more freedom to see, you know, those other voices get in.
Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. You know, I still don't know where this team is as far as, I mean, you know, like I said, they've, you know, they won 6, lost 5, now they've won 5. And, I mean, their goal prevention, obviously, under Yao is a difference here. They seem more disciplined than they were under Hitchcock. But again, it's about consistency. But again, it boils down to Jake Allen. I mean,
it does, especially because they're winning now. But we should keep in mind the broader trend, because the Kings dominated the chances last night. The Islanders dominated possession in that game Saturday, and the Ducks had a great many chances on Friday night as well. So the Blues have been getting enough offense. You know, they have 11 goals in their last 3 games, which for this team is a bountiful harvest. But we do probably need to keep an eye on this trend that they are allowing more chances than they are generating, which, you know, is not necessarily positive. I agree that the team has tightened up under Yo substantially, but over the last, you know, over the last 5 days, we get excited about wins, but we should keep in mind that there is a broader context to all those things too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I mean, the Blues aren't as talented as some teams. We have to admit that, and that's just the way it is. But again, right, if you have the goalie, though, I mean, we've seen this in hockey before in the playoffs. If you have the goalie that is hot and is playing as well as anybody or better than anyone, you know, you can win a series. You can win a couple series. You can do that. It's happened before. And Jake Allen's always has had the ability to do that. Before I go, when we talk about the Kings, and I was watching them, and that's kind of a strange team. I you know, always thought that they were one of the more talented teams. And at the trade deadline, were you a bit surprised at why they when they acquired Ben Bishop? I didn't understand that. I thought maybe they got him to move him to get something else. Do you understand why do they have both Bishop and Jonathan Quick? Is it?
Yeah,
you understand I know they need scoring. Why would they do that? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
So Quick has missed the majority of the season with a groin injury. He was injured in the first game of the year and missed the next like 60 games. The Kings leaned on Peter Budaj. At the time, I suspect that they weren't totally convinced that Quick was going to be able to hold up. That maybe they thought that they got him back, but he wasn't going to be able to have the durability. And they thought that, you know, look, for a playoff run, you would need 2 guys. I saw Dmitry Filipovic, who's an NHL writer based in Toronto, I saw him tweet last night that the Kings did a great job of trading for a guy who will look great sitting on the bench as they can't score goals, which is a reasonable argument, right? You know, the only 4 they go out and trade for is Jerome Iginla, who is not what Jerome McGinley used to be at all. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a curious use of their resources at the deadline. But ultimately, the things that they gave up for Bishop, I think, aren't really assets that would have helped them acquire a scoring forward anyway. So maybe, you know, it's a free roll in that sense, in that what they spent for Bishop, they would not have been able to allocate otherwise. So why not improve one spot where you can? And maybe they, you know, maybe they had deals that fell through, or maybe they thought that they would have enough offense with the players they have. That clearly appears to not be the case. But
yeah,
I know. Before last minute, before I go, I know the Blues. You know, I guess you want to get up to third and past Nashville, I guess. But it's kind of about matchups. I kind of hope if they go out to three, I know you have to play Chicago at some point. I still think Chicago is the best team. I think they're going to win the Cup again. And I would, if I was the Blues, I would try to just to avoid them in the first round.
I think the
Blues could beat the Wild. I think they could beat anybody in the first round. I don't think, though, after what happened last year, I don't think they would beat Chicago in the first round. I think Chicago, with the playoff experience and the people they got on that team, like I said, they're my pick to win the Cup. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thanks, Joe.
Here's what I would say about that briefly is – Chicago, I think, is the team that's trending up and maybe is the best team. The Blues match up better against Chicago than they do Minnesota. And say what you will, there is a psychological aspect to the fact that they slew that particular dragon last year, I think. And I think it allows the team to be better prepared. Whereas Minnesota this year has pretty consistently laid a whooping. I think the Blues actually were 3-2 against Minnesota this season.
Let's look at one number. Goal differential. Minnesota in the standings is at plus 60. Chicago's at plus 33. I mean, that's a pretty big difference. Even though they're only 1 point separating the two teams in the standings, and Chicago handled them on Sunday at the Madhouse on Madison, the goal differential is pretty striking. I mean,
the Minnesota speed game makes me very, very nervous with this Blues team as constructed. Yeah. And I don't know. The Boudreaux factor is difficult because it cuts both ways. He has not had any playoff success at all in his career, and that I'm sure follows him around and haunts him. So at some level, in some year, he's going to break through.
Well, and he's got the highest scoring team in the Western Conference.
Right. And and the highest scoring team and maybe in one of the best goaltenders.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a combination.
It's a little bit of a scary proposition. I don't know. The matchups are going to be difficult any way you slice it.
Right. It's the playoffs. There's no easy matchups. I wanted to read real quick a text from the 6-1 great that says, these West Coast games make for a cranky radio show host, even after a victory. That is 100% correct.
Hot take horn.
I know Doug Vaughn calls himself an Olympic caliber sleeper. I would not say I'm Olympic caliber, but I am pretty good at regulating myself and getting for myself the rest that I need. I'm down a hole right now. Like the last couple days, you know, and it's self-inflicted, right? Because I went to TMA Live on Thursday and then had the games on both Friday and Saturday and did not give myself sufficient recovery time, I think, from any of those things. But, ooh.
Well, the Blues are off tonight, so no reason to stay up late tonight. And then they have games back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday. We don't have a show on Friday, so you just got to get through one more before
I'll get through it. Yeah, I'll be asleep for most of this morning, and I'll get through the game Wednesday night. There's no chance I'll be awake for the start of the game in San Jose.
Well, that's fair. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 105.7 HD2, InsideSTL.com. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt answering the phones. If you'd like to call in and chime in about last night's game, if you stayed up and saw it or you're waking up this morning and hearing us talk about it, you can dial in at 855-282-8255. You can also text in at 855-282-8255. I want to talk a few minutes about the lineup construction here lately and then kind of get into something that we have on the Game Time West website, stlouisgametime.com, looking at one of the younger players, Ivan Barbashev. So, you know, they bring in Zach Sanford from Washington. He has not played in a slew of games.
He's only played once.
Once?
He played. I think it was the game in Colorado. The same game that Jordan Schmaltz got to play in. However, I expect you will see Zach Sanford tomorrow night.
So basically, the young guys are sitting primarily against the good teams, and when we see Colorado and Arizona, they get some playing time.
And we should mention that Dmitri Yashkin bounced his face off of Robert Bortuzzo last night and did not return to the game.
That was a curious play.
Halfway through the second period. So I think we can probably expect to see Sanford tomorrow night.
I think Yashkin only played about 6 or 7 minutes.
It was six and change. He did not return to the game after halfway through the second period.
However, the next lowest ice time player, I believe, was Ivan Barbashev, just over 10 minutes.
Barbashev and Pajarvi were both in that 10 and change sort of range.
But they were on the ice for that one power play that was one of the most curious power play units I think the Blues have iced this year. So at the points where Pietrangelo and David Perron, who, man, I got to tell you, I have a bad feeling that David Perron's going to make a big mistake there. He looked uncomfortable a couple times going back and retrieving the puck or playing the point. And I'm not saying that he's definitely going to let in a chance that's a breakaway for a shorthanded goal, but I would not be shocked if it happens in the near future.
I think that we can probably safely expect a Marian Hossa or Eric Howell, a shorthanded goal in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. At the forward positions, there's Patrick Berglund, Magnus Pajärvi, and Ivan Barbashev on the power play. That I did not expect to see that trio at forward.
But here's the thing.
They scored.
That second unit has been Berglund, Letera, Yashkin for 2 weeks now. That's been the second unit. Letera is not playing. Yashkin was hurt. I guess they got what they got. Especially if you're going to use Steen on the point and Perron on the point, they don't have that many forwards.
I know.
So what happened with not getting Stastny in on the power play much last night?
That's
23 seconds he had on the power play. And you got guys.
Seconds.
You got guys like you said, Perron, who had a minute 34, Pajärvi, who had a minute 15. Upshaw had 30 seconds power play time. Penalty kill time. I'm sorry.
I admit, penalty kill time or power. Or Upshaw did not have any power play time, right?
Sorry. Yeah, he had 30 seconds.
Power play time. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So, admittedly, I did not notice that throughout the course of the game. My guess would be either that it was a shift timing issue, that maybe Stastny was just coming off the shift as power plays were starting, because I know, for example, two of the penalties were against Tarasenko, so Stastny would be on the ice when Tarasenko was on the ice.
Got two penalties?
No, two of them were committed against him. He drew two penalties.
They're on the ice when the penalty
Right, so they'd be on the ice when the penalty occurred, so maybe that would have been part of the reason. I also wonder if he was residually sick, if they were saving some of his energy there by not having him on the power play shifts.
Yeah, and well, Tarasenko had 3:15 on the power play, by far the most. Jaden Schwartz had 3:39. Well, no, I guess Jaden Schwartz had 3:39.
Right.
Jaden Schwartz played 23 minutes last night, by the way.
Almost 23, 22:57.
I'm going to go ahead and point this out real quick before someone else does.
Sure.
I totally messed it all up, guys. I totally messed it all up. Paul Stastny had 3:39 on the power play, so
okay.
I can't read. I can't speak.
I did not notice last night that he was missing, but
Kyle Brodziak was the one right below it.
Right,
you got to follow the number.
It's hard. I'm sitting 3 feet away from the computer. I'm not
But you know what? Here's the good news. We rationalized it in a hurry.
Yes,
we got there.
We did.
We
good job. Good save.
Yeah, we totally did. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 5-9 The Fan. I guess we'll go to the phones. I think Hockey Bob is on the
phone. Hockey Bob. He said he wants to talk expansion.
Expansion?
So let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Hockey Bob. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys. You know, first off, good win by the Blues. I'm wondering if Jeff Cardinal might have been in the stands last night. You guys do remember the play, right? Cardinal, Jamie Stahl, I think it was 1994 playoffs against the Kings.
No, it wasn't 94. It was 96. Yeah, we got it.
So
yeah, we got it.
But anyway,
I don't know. Is he still talking?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead, Bob.
Sorry, Bob.
Hello?
Audio issue.
Hello?
You're on the line, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay, all right.
What?
You know, I don't know if it bothers you as much as it bothers me, but, you know, we got another team. The NHL's got another team that's going to be coming into the league next year, and no team in their right mind would have an odd number of teams in their league, so they're going to expand again. They're going to have another team. And then you got the Blights that is Phoenix. You know, the league is apparently doing very good financially right now. But if you actually look at the numbers, there are still several teams in the NHL that are barely floating, and that includes the Blues, that includes Phoenix, that includes even Pittsburgh is still financially not doing as well as you would expect. And I guess my point is this, you know, why doesn't the NHL do something to fix what they have first before they expand? Because, you know, another thing that expansion does is it weakens the talent pool. And I think at this point in the NHL, and I'm 57, I've seen a lot of expansion. I think at this point in time, the NHL is as stocked with good talent as possible. So by adding two teams, you weaken that pool. So I'm just
yeah, but if it's
to
stocked with good talent as possible,
on.
That means that there is more talent that's available. Like I agree that the league should not let teams be financially imperiled. But they've tried to prop up teams for years and years and years. The league has been operating the Arizona Coyotes, right? Like they've poured
right.
money into those solutions. Eventually, or I should say, at this point, I think that they think the short term boost from expansion is a better economic play than allowing teams to languish. I think that there are also legal lease issues involved here. You can't just up and move a team like Florida, for example.
Right.
So, look, I'm neutral on expansion. I think that a large part of what drew the league to wanting to expand in Las Vegas is because they thought they would be the only game in town and they would be able to get that big fat chunk of the corporate money there. As it turns out, the Raiders are going to end up moving there. And so they're not going to have that exclusivity.
But here's the thing though. They have a brand new arena there, the Verizon Center, which is going to be one of the nicest.
T-Mobile, Verizon's in DC.
Oh, okay. An arena named
Sprint's
after
in Kansas City,
an arena named after a mobile phone company,
the cell phone dome.
Yeah. That's going to be, I mean, I've seen pictures. It looks super, super nice. And it has to be to attract high rollers there in Vegas. And the owner of the team is one of the casino owners, right? Really deep pockets, I think. So it's not like they're finding somebody who's barely scratching together the money to build the building and to field the team and pay the expansion fee. They're finding somebody who can afford to do this and be in this long term. So I think saying that there are teams in economic distress other parts of the league ignores that they're finding somebody super rich who wants to give a team in Las Vegas a good go. It you know, could you argue that maybe they should have moved another team like Arizona to Las Vegas? Sure. But, I mean, that still hasn't played out yet, and Vegas is going to be ready to play next year.
Here's a fun little track, by the way.
Yeah.
Bill Foley is the Bill Foley, who owns the Black Knights, or the Golden Knights, I'm sorry, is the chairman of the board for Fidelity Financial. He is from Jacksonville, Florida. He wanted to buy the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars were only purchased by Shad Khan because Shad
Stan
Khan
Kroenke.
Could not purchase the Rams.
Because Stan Kroenke came in at the last minute.
If Stan Kroenke lets Shad Khan buy the Rams, then Bill Foley buys the Jaguars, and there are no Vegas Golden Knights.
That is crazy. Wow. Well, that's some dominoes there. Hockey Bob, thank you for the call, sir. I want to get to something here with one of the young guys, Ivan Barbashev. If you go to our website, stlouisgametime.com, we have an interesting story up. There was a pretty long interview posted on a Russian website called sportsexpress.ru, Sports Express. So it was done with totally in Russian. So Ivan was obviously more comfortable talking to him than, say, Jeff Jones from Game Time, who's speaking to him in English.
I will say this, by the way.
Yeah.
His English is very good. Like, he's super easy to talk to. I read an article, a different article about him about a month ago that said he's only been speaking English for, like, less than 5 years. His English is great. Like, not a problem.
But it's not like he's been a good quote or, and, you know, and maybe he knows his place in the dressing room. He's, you know, the last guy on the boat, basically. So I think he understands his place. And judging by at least one of his answers, I think he definitely knows his place. So,
yeah,
our friends over at the Hockey Writers, Alessandro Serenroso, did a full English translation of the interview. There was one thing I had not really heard about. So, in the interview, Ivan is asked about a contract offer in the offseason from Dynamo Moscow, one of the KHL teams, one of the more successful KHL teams, I think. They were even around before the KHL. And Ivan's response is, yes, it's true. I really almost signed it. But in the end, I decided to spend a further year in America. I decided that I would just get back home if I wouldn't get a chance in the NHL. At the end of the day, I want to play at the highest level. Now I understand that I took the correct decision. I still have 1 year out of my contract with the Blues, and everything is in my hands. Now, as we've talked off the radio, I think he may, something may have gotten lost in translation. And you know, there's a chance he may not totally understand the collective bargaining agreement of the National Hockey League. He will be a restricted free agent for some time after his first contract is up. This is his first season in the NHL. He's been in AHL two seasons. So he's not going to be a free agent for a while.
He's not going to be an NHL free agent, but it should be noted that generally speaking, the KHL has not been under obligation to respect RFA rights. So if players players who are restricted free agents are free to sign with KHL teams. You saw, for example, Valery Nichushkin in Dallas sign a contract with a KHL team this season as an RFA.
So he could have some leverage when his contract comes up, which should be an interesting situation, because I think if you look at the depth at center in the organization, he's pretty much it as far as Blues level / AHL level before you get to guys who are still in juniors and still teenagers and that kind of thing.
He is the second or third best center in the organization right now, depending on whether Patrick Berglund is having a good hair day.
True. So I think he's important, and he's not going anywhere. He's definitely going to be up with the Blues the rest of the season. If and when they make the playoffs, he's going to get playoff time. He's a guy that they need to lean on to see some progression, to see some growth, and put in positions where he can take his game to the next level and stick around and become an everyday NHL player. I think he's showing that, and I think it's going to happen. So to hear that he's already had offers and really consider going back to Mother Russia before, and I, you know, in the interview there is some discussion about how he was frustrated that he had not been called up to the NHL previously.
There is another layer to this story that is not discussed in this interview, and I wish I had that article from Barbashev from a month ago that I could refer to, but in that article it talks about his wife, who he married when he was 18. You know, it's cultural. They get married younger over there.
Is she still back in Russia?
No, she's here.
Okay.
But there were some immigration issues in getting her here.
Oh.
And so in terms of going home, that's probably an aspect that is, you know, that's part of that decision calculus.
With the current climate on immigration in the United States, I would think they would be a little worried about that.
Well, but she's Russian, so
I know.
Friend of the White House.
Fair point. Moving on, there was a question about the coaching change, and I'll even read the question. Maybe you had a sigh of relief when you heard about Ken Hitchcock's firing. You didn't have a chance with him. It's not really a question, it's a statement. And maybe it belies what Ivan Barbashev feels about the situation, because here's his answer. I think you understand that I simply cannot reply the way you would like to, but I do say that I really enjoy working with Mike Yeo. With him, the team changed a lot of things, and wins started to come. Yes, we had some bad games, but we don't feel like we're out of the playoffs yet. It's interesting to work with him, and our attitude has radically changed. I think Ivan Barbashev has probably blamed his lack of call-up from the AHL on Ken Hitchcock.
Potentially. The question as phrased is, I mean, bad. But
here's the thing. Before the reporter turned on the tape recorder, there's a good chance they had a conversation.
Yeah.
And Ken Hitchcock's name had probably come up in the conversation. And without the tape recorder running, Ivan Barbashev probably said something. And the guy pretty much lets it out of the bag how he feels. And Barbashev, veteran move, he's talking to a guy who's posting a story in Russia in his native language. And, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time and effort for this story to come back to the United States, to come back to St. Louis. If he had basically let loose on what he thought of Ken Hitchcock, and if he had blamed Hitchcock for not being called up for the AHL, it would have come back. He realized that. He didn't open his mouth. That's kind of a veteran move, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. Like he says, he can't really answer that question the way it's phrased, because the question is, boy, that Ken Hitchcock sure sucked, huh? I mean, like, what's he going to say at that point? I'm sure that Ivan Barbashev felt frustration at not being called up, and that when he was called up, he played with Reeves and Upshaw. I'm sure that was not his, like, that was not his optimal situation for reaching the NHL.
And if you haven't read the interview yet, go to stlouisgametime.com, click on the full English translation. There's an interesting story about how Ryan Reeves was talking to the youngster Ivan Barbashev about what their roles were and what Reeves could do for Barbashev on the ice. And it's kind of an interesting give and take, and I think Reeves definitely was looking out for his little buddy there. Last section that I wanted to mention, The question is, this season you played very well in the AHL. What is the secret of your progress? And I thought this was a really interesting answer. I have much more trust. Our coach is Craig Berube. In spite that he was an enforcer, he knows hockey very well. We played in a much more systemized style, and this year there are much better ties between the Wolves and St. Louis. Finally, the AHL team started helping the Blues. And that's been something that people who have been watching how the prospect pipeline has been working and the entire system of drafting guys and putting them in the system and having them matriculate up to the NHL level, that there's been a concern that after the Blues sold the Peoria Rivermen and they affiliated with the AHL Wolves, who are an independent organization that have their own players under contract. Like we mentioned yesterday, James Wisniewski is playing for the Wolves, veteran guy, longtime NHL player. He's only under contract with the Wolves. If the Blues wanted to bring him up for, you know, depth at the end of the season or in the playoffs, they'd actually have to sign him to a new NHL contract.
And pass him through waivers.
Yeah. So the situation has been, I think that people here in St. Louis and people watching the system have been worried that the Wolves have been much more interested in their own success in the minors, selling tickets, making the playoffs, advancing the playoffs, even though they haven't in recent seasons. But now it seems like there is much more communication, and there have been a number of players who have been called up who have been contributors at the AHL level.
Well,
and Kenny Agostino's, Wade Megan's, but then also guys like Ivan Barbashev, Jordan Schmaltz, whenever he sees the ice, and hopefully at some point this season or definitely next season, a Vince Dunn, who is playing well at the AHL level.
The other consideration there, he talks about the change in the coach. John Anderson, who was the coach of the Wolves before this season, is a guy who sort of bounced from the NHL to the AHL and back, has been in Chicago a couple of times, and you wonder how much that plays into the difficult relationship as well, if that's a guy who is more focused on trying to make a name for himself and generate some notice and get back to the NHL than a guy who's focused on team development.
Well, and I think Craig Berube taking that job, he won't be long for that, I don't think.
No, I would imagine that Berube will either be an NHL assistant or probably an NHL head coach next season.
Yeah, so I think they're only going to get one season out of Berube. But, hey, if he helps guys like Barbashev and maybe some of the other guys that have been called up or could be called up here before the end of the year, it's going to be worth it, right?
I would think so. I mean, I would hope that the Blues could find a spot for Berube in St. Louis. You know, it's hard to know exactly how the structuring of the assistant coaches works. I don't know what Ray Bennett does.
He's been around for a long time.
Right, he's been around for 10 years. See him. He's not on the bench during the games. He's not on the ice during practice. He's got a very sort of out of the way kind of role. So I'm sure that I'm sure that kind of limited role is not what Berube would want. So you'd be looking at a pretty substantial restructuring if that was a spot that you took over. And yeah, there is one open assistant spot now, but I mean, Steve Thomas kind of filled that assistant spot, right? Like right before Hitchcock was fired, Thomas went from the press box down to the bench and has been on the bench ever since. And I, you know, Steve Tommy, they call him Stumpy. He is a pretty visible presence around the team.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation. If they, you know, I think they probably have some space, you know, depending on if they bring Ray Bennett back, which, you know, he comes back every year. He just never goes away. He's kind of, he's been a Teflon assistant coach that has seen several coaching changes. They are down an assistant because, you know, after Ken Hitchcock was fired, they promoted from within Mike Yeo. So they could find room for him possibly. I would hope that they try to hold on to him. But if Mike Yeo is the long-term answer at head coach, it's not like Berube would be the coach in waiting. I mean, that worked so well the first time.
I mean, right. So there's a limited amount of upward mobility for him here.
Yeah. So I doubt he'll be around long.
I don't ever want to hear coach in waiting ever again.
Hey, you know, at some point we have to say, though, that maybe it all worked out that if they hadn't made the coaching change, if they didn't have a Mike Yeo waiting to take the job, maybe they wouldn't make this turnaround.
Or they could have given Kirk Muller the job in July.
Right.
They could have. Could have
been Kirk Muller. Could have
been, you know,
somebody else moving forward, like the guy from Florida that got fired. What was his name?
Gerard Gallant.
He's an interesting
Claude
candidate.
Julien.
Yeah. Claude Julien.
And I'm
he was unemployed for like a week.
Fine with Mike Yeo so far. The team has played well. The team is in the playoffs, likely to make the playoffs, and he appears to be managing things well.
It sounds like you're slow playing Mike Yeo a little bit. You're not all in yet.
there's not. I mean,
you want to see the playoffs.
Yeah. What are we gonna? You know, what are you gonna say? His team's burned out in Minnesota in the playoffs. He had trouble establishing consistent offense as a head coach. That appears to still be the case now. The team is not like, it's not like they're scoring a lot of goals. So
one of our friends on Twitter, going back to the conversation about Jake Allen and the coaching situation, Gabriel says, I feel like we fans need to send Conklin and Brodeur flowers and a thank you card for turning around Jake Allen's year. That's fair. I send him to Scott Trade Center. I think,
yeah.
It's about time someone gave Conklin some credit. I'm sure he's been working magic.
Yeah. We're up against the top of the hour, so we got to make sure. Just here's behind the scenes. If we don't break before 6 a.m., then we lose this part of the audio segment. And, you know, every second of the segment is important. So we want to make sure that we don't lose anything in the transition. So we're going to take a break here. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News. We're going to talk a little bit of NCAA hoops. Because, you know, we're a hockey show, but hockey ends at some point, and we have hopes of being a long-term show. And we're going to have to talk about other things, so every once in a while we got to sprinkle that stuff in.
But college basketball ends before hockey does.
Okay, that's fair. we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan.